Hello, everyone. I'm Rami, your favorite host to learn about health in a fun way. Today, our episode is special. We're with Dr. Renzo Ginto, with the degrees of Doctor of Public Health from Harvard University and Doctor of Medicine from the University of the Philippines, Manila. He is one of the staunchest, most exciting, and most innovative voices for the new discipline of planetary health. Dr. Ginto is the Chief Planetary Doctor of PH Lab, a GloCal think and do tank for advancing the health of both people and the planet. Dr. Renzo has traveled to and lectured in nearly 50 countries, published more than 100 articles in scientific journals, books, and popular media, and directed and produced short films that communicate the message of planetary healing to the world. Today, we're interviewing a scholar and an activist. So, welcome, Dr. Ginto.
Hello, Rami. Thank you for having me here.
It's really wonderful having you. And let's start off by, being hip. So about the hashtag climate changes health, what does that mean to you? And what do you think it should mean to people and leaders?
Thanks for that question. And you must have found out about that hashtag in one of my tweets. So climate changes health. Climate change is changing our health and will continue to do so in the next years and decades to come. Of course, I don't want to belittle the challenge that we are facing now, which is COVID-19, another health problem that is changing our society, our world today. But there is also this other challenge, perhaps a much bigger one and a much more long-term problem of climate change that will unfortunately surely affect our health and even the health of those that are yet to be born. Because it's not just a health issue that is going to affect our generation. It's an intergenerational health challenge. So that's what's really special and interesting about climate change as a health problem. And climate change is going to affect us in many different ways. There are a lot of diseases that are expected and are already shaping and influencing from infectious diseases brought to you by mosquitoes like dengue and malaria, or heat-related illness because of exposure to extreme heat, to even non-communicable diseases due to air pollution and, extreme heat as well. So those are just examples of diseases that are tightly connected with climate change.
We do agree. We also had episodes before about malaria, dengue, and even diarrhea, and the idea of how climate change really exacerbates some of these health problems. But so, Dr. Ginto, I remember once hearing in one of your lectures at Oxford University, talking about how when you were still acquiring your Doctor of Medicine, you protested outside of the university, or at least tried to advocate in order to integrate climate change into the conversation of medicine. So is this a personal kind of issue, or do you think that it's just lost on people about how climate change affects our human health?
I think it's beyond personal. Of course, the motivation is very personal. I live in the Philippines, one of the most vulnerable countries in the world to climate change, where climate change is not just an issue for the future. It's already happening now. Over the past week, and we actually just had the strongest super typhoon that ever hit land in this year, and one of the strongest even for the past decade. And so it's personal, but also I think now there is a growing conversation within the professional community of medicine. There's an increasing number of doctors who already are acknowledging that climate change is a health issue, that we need to prepare ourselves, brace ourselves for the long-term impacts. We need to ensure our health systems are the last building standing or the last system standing when climate-related disasters do occur. But also, we are now realizing our responsibility to, you've said a while ago, I was protesting. I was outside my medical school with a placard that says climate change is the biggest global health threat of the 21st century. That's actually published in the medical journal The Lancet more than a decade ago. And, you know, I had to say that and I had to communicate that in order to really influence the conversation within medicine, start acknowledging that climate change is not just an issue about dehydrated polar bears.
Yeah.
And of course, we love our polar bears.
I mean, polar bears are very cute.
Exactly, right? And unfortunately, that cuteness is being threatened because of the melting of the ice caps and the heating in the Arctic, in the poles. But really, it's beyond polar bears and coal-fired power plants being shut down. It's really about people. Yeah. It's our patients and our future patients who will be affected by climate change and its many different effects. And so, yes, it's personal. It's also professional. It's a conversation happening within the profession. And I think ultimately it's societal. We're now talking while we're still waiting for the results of the American election.
That's true.
And, this is a very historic election for many reasons, including for climate change, because you have two competitors who have very different opposing views about climate change. And by the way, I think it was yesterday when the U.S. officially is out
of
the Paris Agreement, right? Yeah. And so the other candidate was saying, you know, once elected, in a few weeks' time, the U.S. will be back.
This brings about so many different questions in my mind, but tagging kind of the last point about the states being out of the Paris Agreement, the United States is one of the most polluting countries in the world, right? And yet it is to a certain extent not as affected by it as some of the parts of the Caribbean, as well as a lot of islands in Oceania, one of which is, of course, thinking also about the Philippines. And so are the health challenges that are facing these kind of developing nations that are not really contributing as significantly as, for example, China or the United States, similar? Is there kind of a parallel story to all of these different countries and the health challenges that will come with the climate kind of change?
So first, it's very interesting that you describe the U.S. as an over-polluting country. And I am now remembering a conversation with a colleague who was suggesting that maybe instead of describing countries as either developed or developing, we should categorize them on whether they are over-polluting or under-polluting. Are they carbon-intensive countries or less carbon-emitting countries? I think that's an important distinction to be made because you're asking about differentiated impacts. You know, are the effects in the Philippines similar in other places? Definitely, the impacts are differentiated, you know, depending on their geography, depending on, you know, their socio-economic status, because it's not just geography. If you live in the tropic, then you're more affected by climate change. But you can be, you know, a poor country in the tropics, and that compounds your baseline vulnerability to climate change, right? It's like accumulated sources of vulnerability. And so, you know, poor countries with bad governments living in the tropics where typhoons or flooding or droughts are more likely to occur than in other places, those are definitely going to see the impact sooner, faster, and perhaps at a bigger magnitude. Having said that, you've already mentioned, you know, I think you mentioned Australia, but also the United States in recent months, especially during their summer. We've seen the wildfires in their forest. And that is a stark reminder that no country is immune to climate change. We're now talking about COVID vaccine. There should be a climate vaccine that we should also be developing. And I think that climate vaccine is double-edged. One side is resilient and adaptation. You know, how can we prepare for these health impacts, whether it's fires in Australia and in California, or typhoons in the Philippines, or locust crisis in Africa. But the other and equally important side of that vaccine is mitigation. How can we continuously lower our emissions? And, you know, unfortunately, that's still something that is generally slow in terms of progress. We've seen some slight decarbonization as a result of the lockdowns, because cars have stopped being driven or factories have been downsized because of the lockdowns. But those are temporary, and we need to find more sustainable, lasting, and intentional ways of reducing our carbon while we are preparing for the differentiated impacts that I discussed just shortly.
On that perfect note, is really asking you a little bit more about your brilliant doctoral project, right? So the idea of kind of building and incorporating resilience and really bringing back, you know, climate change to the health issue of building climate smart local health system. So what is that? I mean, how can we incorporate climate resilience into our health systems to improve not only human, but also planetary health?
Climate smart health system. I think that is actually the vaccine that I'm referring to a while ago. Because climate smartness means the convergence of adaptation and mitigation. And health systems are sectors or systems that require to adapt or are required to adapt because, again, of the health impacts that I described a while ago. Sadly, some of these health impacts are already manifesting in many different parts of the world, and more are yet to come. And so how can we prepare health systems to respond to these health impacts, to protect their people, to protect people's lives? On the other hand, climate smart, again, the climate smart vaccine also includes mitigation, right? And in the context of a health system, we must make sure that the health system also is not an accomplice to the climate crime. Because it's just antithetical that the health sector is trying to treat climate-related diseases while at the same time emitting carbon to worsen the climate situation. And also, the health sector is always seen as a leader in society. But do you know that for 18 years in the United States, their annual Gallup poll that asks, who among the professionals do you trust the most? Do you know what's the top answer? It's not the doctors that are the most trusted. The nurses are really seen as leaders and heroes, especially now in this time of pandemic. They are the frontliners. And so there is both a moral argument to be made for decarbonizing the health sector. There's also a leadership argument because of the high regard that we receive from the rest of society. So if we lead the way, then the hope is that other sectors will follow suit. Mm-hmm. And I think we should also communicate more powerfully even the economics of low carbon healthcare. And for instance, because of COVID, telemedicine has become very popular, which is, by the way, low carbon healthcare. Of course, you know, there are still health services that require face-to-face contact. But imagine if all the ones that can be avoided, the face-to-face contact that can be avoided and be shifted to telemedicine, you know, we'll be saving a lot of money and we'll be emitting less carbon as well for health. You know, that's what a climate smart health system is, you know, the convergence of adaptation and mitigation.
Yeah, and I really love the point about how the health sector can really lead and inspire other sectors to follow suit about thinking and incorporating climate smartness into the systems. And I'm really fascinated by the idea of what we can do from the inside, right, to change the outside. And for example, Planned Parenthood has already extended the kind of telemedicine option to all of its different states. And similarly, what does that look like in the future time? I think that COVID-19 has accelerated the adoption of telemedicine. And similar to what you had been saying, it is more climate kind of smart to have the option to forego people needing to take either their cars, coming across, all that. And so I wanted to really bring about the issue of, similar to what you had been saying earlier, climate change is the biggest health problem, right? I would really love to kind of hear your opinion about something that we were discussing within our team. Should climate change be treated as a public health emergency of international concern, so similar to COVID-19? Do you think that that could change the global response in order for people to become, you know, more climate smart and think beyond polar bears?
I think yes. You know, I think many places, many cities, some countries have already made those kinds of announcements. I think this is important, you know, to really sound the alarm, to, you know, communicate the sense of urgency that the problem, the emergency actually entails. Can the World Health Organization, for instance, declare a public health emergency of international concern? I think I have colleagues who actually have already argued that climate change can meet the requirements, the legal requirements in the international health regulations. Although IHR will still need to be reviewed. There are lots of loopholes, gaps that were identified and magnified by COVID-19. And that review might be actually a good opportunity to introduce the idea that, hey, climate change should be put also in the list of emergencies, because while, you know, the more dramatic effects of climate change will only happen maybe 10 years from now, what we're seeing with COVID is, if we only characterize or classify as emergencies those conditions that are already so dramatic, already killing a lot of people, already, you know, widespread in scale, that's too late. That's too late. And so we actually want a system that, even before emergency has occurred, we are already mobilized and we are already rallying around, you know, prevention and preparedness. And so that, I think, is the mindset that we need for COVID-19. That is also the same mindset that we have, that we need for climate change. It is an emergency. It may not appear as an emergency now, because there are no, you know, you don't see a lot of people dying of climate change, although
there are,
you know, effects are already happening, right, in some corners of the world. But we don't want for the worst to happen, right? Because that is going to be irreversible.
Yeah. And I think on that point, we can end kind of with the most important question for us generations as an organization that really tries to empower youth and inspire leadership. So the issue that you are bringing about is that this is for the long haul. You know, you can't look at this with tunnel vision. And it's also an intergenerational problem. And so the question with regard to that, that I'm thinking about is, what are some of the ways that the youth can become empowered to be more conscious, but more importantly, more proactive about this climate health nexus? Maybe think about it as, if you were to say something to the generations after you, what would you tell them?
I think young people are very conscious about the defects of the system of the world. I think we are the generation, the young people of today. It's a generation that is so empowered, so informed, thanks to digital technology, social media, although social media is also creating its new problems, from fake news to, you know, mental distress, right? But I think the good side is that this generation is so way informed. And we know that there's power in knowledge. Knowledge is power. Having said that, you know, we need to drive and really, you know, inspire our generation to go beyond knowing and being aware and shift to acting and making change. And oftentimes we use the youth card to say, oh, you know, we're very aware and we're very energetic, but we're not the ones in positions of power and authority. We don't have the capacity to effect change. But I think we need to start thinking as if we are the leaders now. And we are already leaders now. We're not leaders of tomorrow. But we will, more importantly, be leaders of tomorrow when the worst impacts of climate change have already emerged. And so we don't want to be put in that position when we are trying to tackle multiple pandemics at the same time, because action was, one, relegated to the previous generation, and two, we did not do our part, you know, when there's still a window of opportunity to act on it. You know, we're given 10 years, remember, according to the United Nations report, until 2030, to really stop or even reverse the climate trajectory that we're in. And so if you're a 10-year-old or 15-year-old or 20-year-old, don't think your turn will happen in 10 years' time. And for now, just be an observant. In fact, this is the right time to act so that in the future, you know, it's not that we will not have problems, but perhaps the problems will have been mitigated in a form that is easier to manage. And also, finally, and I just encountered this recently published book. It's entitled The Good Ancestor by Roman Krznaric. And the basic thesis of the book is that we need to become good ancestors for generations to come. And because we want the young people of year 2120, 100 years from now, to read the history books and to say that the COVID generation of 2020 were good ancestors to them. Because we made the right decisions that are not selfish, that took into account the needs of the generation 100 years from now. And we've made sure that they have a planet, you know, for instance, that they can still enjoy.
That's very beautiful. And I do think that we live on a very, very beautiful planet. And on that note, really, we thank you for joining us for our new podcast of Generations for Health entitled What the Health. And we really do hope and that you know, PH Lab launches and is incredible. And we thank you already for all the beautiful work that you are doing.
Thank you so much for having me. And more power to you and your group and your podcast. And let's all stay safe because we still have a big mission to fulfill.
Yes.
Powerful words spoken by Dr. Guinto. Let us remember our ancestors and think of ourselves as future ones. Check out his LinkedIn profile and you'll get a chance to see all the incredible work he's doing. Yeah, it's a lot, but thank you again for everything that you do. And my friends, with that, we conclude the season on the Climate Health Nexus. It's been pretty fun, right? I mean, you remember that one time I talked about living under the sea? Well, I'm still thinking about it, but hey, stay tuned with us because the next season is big. We're talking about one of the leading causes of death, pneumonia. It may not be sexy, but it is deadly. Remember, stay safe and stay healthy.
We really hope that you're having fun with us. What the Health is our newest podcast by Generations for Health. Our writers are Idan Riestra and Daryl Alvarez. Our editors, Angie Villal and Candela Mejido. I was Rami. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.